We are Sarva. The future of education starts here.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Everyday Genius. I'm your host, Pete Craig. And today it's a great pleasure to welcome to the show a veteran musician who toured throughout the 90s with his band, the whole of the world. They sold over 3 million records. He's also the author of a book, which is called Saved by Sound. And that's one of the things that we're going to talk about a little bit today. He's a wellness practitioner, and he's also a professor at St. Francis University in the US. It's a great pleasure to welcome to the show, Jim Donovan. Jim, welcome.
Great to be here. So glad to be here.
Yeah, amazing. So before we dive in, let's just touch on that because it's difficult to ignore your past. And as I was just sharing with my business partner earlier today, he's a musician himself, and like I said, you toured the world, you sold 3 million records, and he's like, that's quite a lot. How did that start? Were you a musician from early on, or was this something that you learned to do?
Yeah, that was in my 20s. I was in a band called Rusted Root, and we toured mostly North America, but we were also over in the UK with Robert Plant and Jimmy Page, doing some of their tours in 1995. They did like an unleaded tour.
Yeah.
And I was always aiming at music. My whole thing, as a young person, was I wanted to perform. I played drum set back then, and I had that dream that a zillion other people have, and was very fortunate that we broke through and had about a 15-year run with the band. We had a song that really helped us launch. It's called Send Me On My Way. And you would find that like in the Matilda soundtrack and the Ice Age soundtrack. It's like in Enterprise car commercials now. So yeah. We've sold out to the man, and it's okay.
Yeah, I'm sure it means that that you're still getting some royalties from that.
Yeah, I mean, there's still car payments, so that helps. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Good stuff. So what you're doing now though is a complete transition from that. So I'm interested in how you went from that life to what you're doing now, and you're using sound to heal and sound to create transformation in people. So what was the trigger for that? What was the transformation? Did something happen for you?
Yeah, several things. Through all my time making music and still today doing it, I noticed that it gave me a release that I needed. I grew up in the 80s. There was no talk of emotional intelligence. Men especially are supposed to suck up emotion and hold it as long as they possibly can. And so I found an outlet in the physicality of drumming. I was able to move anger and move all kinds of things, just physically hitting something that was safe to do. Plus, I loved that it helped people to want to move as well. Yeah. And that was one of the things in Rusted Root, is that we were mainly a tribal dance band. People would come and they would just dance and dance and dance. Mm-hmm. And over the years, one of the things that kept happening, which really interested me, was that a fan would come up after a show, and besides the starstruck thing, they would be like, "Dude, you don't understand. I've never felt this way before. I cried during the show. They're in this like altered state of being." Yeah. Now, some of that was probably some of the things that they were smoking, but a lot of it, just over the years, seeing this same reaction, like I had a catharsis. I had a progression forward, and there was something about dancing to that rhythm and singing along and just all the being together with people that made me feel in a way I've never felt before. Hmm. And I knew what they were talking about because I felt it too from the stage. I would have that same, a similar kind of catharsis when I would witness them in their state.
Yeah.
I could see the faces, I could see the expressions. And so that would flow to me, and I would give it back that much harder because I was in with them. Yeah. And that's so that really piqued my interest, but I didn't understand why. Mm-hmm. You know, part of my brain was like, well, maybe it's just magic, you know. Yeah. But as I transitioned from the band, I left in the early 2000s, so 2005. My wife and I had just had three little kids in a row, and I knew that if I didn't get off the road, I was going to miss the whole thing, and that wasn't acceptable. I had already toured around the United States 25 or so times, and so I didn't feel a need to do it again. And so I made a break, made a transition, and like somehow, I'll tell you the quick story. I got to St. Francis via a Rusted Root show. So one of my final ones, we were at a college and the power went out. And I had been facilitating drumming workshops where I would divide a group into one section and divide a group into another section and give them rhythms. So I went to the front of the stage and I did this with 2,000 drunk college kids. Wow. No power, you know, and so I divide this side and I give them a rhythm and a vocal thing to do. And then I do this side and give them a different rhythm and a different vocal. They think it's the best thing since sliced bread. They're having a great time. And the power comes back on. We jump back in right where we left off, finish the show. And, you know, I thought that was it. And a guy came up to me afterwards and he introduced himself. His name is Chuck Olson. And he said, "What possessed you to do that? What the heck was that?" And I told him about the drumming work that I was doing with people, the drum circle work.
Yeah.
And he asked if I would come to St. Francis to do one. And little did I know, but that night, the president of the university was on the steps watching this whole thing. And Chuck had a design that, you know, if I was ever available, then maybe he could get me to teach there. Mm-hmm. Even though I didn't have teaching pedigree, I didn't have the degree for it. I just had a bachelor's degree. And so fast forward, I left the band and a week later I got the call. And a week later I was also pretty desperate because my middle daughter has food allergies. And so she was in an ambulance like 8 times. Yeah. And I had these bills that were stacking up. And so he's like, "Would you take this?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'll take anything right now."
Yeah.
And here we are today, years later. Mm. That's kind of a long way to get to. That once I got to the university, part of the deal there is that you have to know why things work. And so I had to research it. And as I researched it, it blew my mind apart. I'm like, why don't I know this? I mean, I'm a professional musician and I have no idea what's happening when I do what I do.
Yeah.
And that's kind of driven me to do all the things I'm doing now with sound healing.
Sure. So you've opened that door. So I'm going to walk through it with you. Why does that happen? Why do people have those reactions that you talked about? What is it within the music? What is it within the sound that is creating that reaction?
Yeah, well, it's a whole collection of things. That's the beauty of it. And it depends on what the circumstance is. So at a big show, one of the things that we've seen in multiple studies is that if I'm listening to music with people, and especially if I'm moving, you know, even like moving to the beat, we might not be doing the same exact move, but if we're all kind of pulsing to the beat together, that creates something called synchrony in the body and in the brain. And I start to feel an affinity with the people that are around me, even though I might not know them. And part of that affinity comes from a chemical. It's called oxytocin. And it's, among many things, it's a bonding hormone that happens. It happens at childbirth. It happens during sex. It happens when you hug someone that you care about for 22 seconds, oxytocin starts to flow.
Yeah.
So between the synchrony and this chemical reaction, I start to feel something new. Oxytocin is also a feel-good chemical, so that's affecting all my neurochemicals. But past that, when we make music, and especially if we or when we listen to music and we start to sing along, then we start to stimulate, you've talked about this already, something called the vagus nerve. And when I stimulate that with my voice, especially if I do it for a long period of time, that also creates a chemical change in the body. We get things like endorphins, again, more oxytocin.
Yeah.
We get this stuff called nitric oxide, which is anti-inflammatory. And then our good friend dopamine.
Yeah.
So all those things together add up to, you know, sort of a like a biological catharsis. Mm-hmm. But on top of that is then the emotional connection that people have with the music. So they have their own stories, their own nostalgia with it in some cases. Mm-hmm. And so plop all those together and you've got kind of the science of why live music can really work for people.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a great explanation. So the vagus nerve. Explain to, or can you explain, Kai, you know, to the listeners, like what the vagus nerve is and why? Because I didn't realize until I found you and started reading up a little bit about it. You know, how big a part this nerve plays within our bodies.
Totally, vagus nerve, I think, is one of the most little known, crucial parts of the body. It's something that's really never talked about in a biology class in high school. You probably encounter it in anatomy class once you get to college if you're in health sciences. But so the vagus nerve, sort of simple explanation, is that it's the longest cranial nerve in the body. It's attached at the back of your brain. It goes right over your vocal cords. And then I'll back up a little bit. But it goes the whole way down into the lower abdomen. And its function, it's like, you can think of it as the most elaborate superhighway you can imagine. So it innervates, you know, behind the eyes, it goes into your ears, of course down through your throat, and then if you look at an anatomy diagram, you can see it wraps all around the organs in your body, the heart, the lungs, the liver, the lower intestines. And what happens is information travels from your brain down through the vagus nerve to communicate with the parts of the body. But then it also, the body communicates back up to the brain via the vagus nerve. So it's like this two-way thing, but it's not just, you know, up and down. It's like all around.
Yeah.
In these really elaborate ways. So when we stimulate it with sound, you know, if you even, you could do this with me, you can just hold your hands on your neck like this. You take a breath in and then just hum. So if you can feel vibration in your hands, that is the stimulation that the nerve is getting from the vibration of your voice. Wow. And when you do that, this is the coolest thing. When you vibrate this nerve, it automatically sends messages to the brain and to the body, release the feel-good chemicals.
Right.
Turn on the dopamine, turn on the nitric oxide, all the things that I said before.
Yeah.
So if we do this over a period of time, right, all of a sudden we can shift our state.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So is there a link then between that and this, the kind of ancient, you know, kind of wisdom and the, you know, the Om sound, the mantra sound that that came from the East? Is that linked? Have you found any evidence to kind of like demonstrate that, you know, this is one of the reasons for that?
Absolutely. So if you look throughout spiritual cultures, whether you're talking the more modern ones, you know, Islam, Hinduism, Christianity, I consider those more modern.
Yeah.
And then the ancient ones, so indigenous societies, pre-industrialization, pre-religion, all of them use sound, specifically repetitious sound, you know, the chanting, the mantras like you talked about. Even in more modern religions like Catholicism, you'll see people chanting the rosary, you know, saying the rosary over and over and over again. And it's a commonality that we can see throughout recorded history that people use repetitious sound. They use some sort of rhythm instrument, a drum, shaker, and then they use movement. Like this is, I like to call it like it's the building blocks of humanity. And we can see, no matter if I'm chanting Om, Om, or if I'm saying Amen, if I hold my hands here, I'm still stimulating the vagus nerve.
So
what's cool about this is that, so dopamine and endorphins in particular, if we produce enough of them, we start to feel some euphoria that people can also label a spiritual experience. I'm not discounting the spiritual experience. I'm just saying that even if you're not religious, right? Or even if you are super religious, the biology, the physiology of this stuff works.
Yeah. So how does that work then, from a healing perspective? So, you talked about a lot of what you do now, aside from the drumming workshops and the work with the university, is kind of like healing, sound healing. How does that work, and what does that involve?
Absolutely. So if you look at the word healing, healing means to bring back into balance.
Yeah.
One of the things that gets out of balance in our bodies is the balance between two parts of our what's called the autonomic nervous system. Mm-hmm. So the parasympathetic system, which is about rest and digest, and the sympathetic, which is the fight or flight.
Yeah.
So for a lot of us, especially in 2020, especially in any kind of chaotic world or situation, the sympathetic nervous system, so the fight or flight system, gets turned on. And for a lot of us, it's just on.
Yeah.
So it creates this imbalance. And if it's on long enough, it makes it even harder to bring balance back to the body, where there's a healthy push and pull.
Yeah.
So sympathetic system is not an enemy, right? It is, we need this to keep us safe.
Yeah.
But it does us a lot of damage if it's always on, right? Mm-hmm. That chronic stress.
Yeah.
If I'm going to bed stressed, waking up stressed day after day, I'm probably in it. And when I'm in it, one of the things that happens in fight or flight, there's adrenaline, of course, and then there's this stuff called cortisol. You might have talked about on the show before. But cortisol, you could think of adrenaline like is the short burst of energy. Cortisol is like a longer time-released energy.
Yeah.
And if we don't do anything to burn it off, it actually does damage to organs and does damage to brain cells. It actually will eat away at that part of our body, which over time degrades health and can lead to the diseases that you don't want to be dealing with, the heart trouble, stroke, etc.
Yeah.
So the sound healing, so I'm not talking about some magical frequency that's just going to make me better. We're actually looking at, we are bringing nervous system back into balance, because when I stimulate the vagus nerve, it activates the parasympathetic nervous system.
Yeah.
Even if I'm escalated, it helps to bring that balance and that healthy push and pull.
Mm. Yeah. Interesting. And so is there is this something that should be practiced on a regular basis to keep that, to keep that balance maintained? Is that part of, do you have a routine that includes, kind of stimulating the vagus nerve? Is that part of your daily routine that kind of then keeps you in balance? Is it something that you recommend to other people who are perhaps in a stress response?
I do, and I can say that last year I had five surgeries where I got septic shock, and so I was on my way off the planet. It was pretty precarious. I had been doing sound healing for years before that, But when I got out of the hospital, I was completely emaciated. I had lost 40 pounds, muscles were wasted. And I had, you know, so that was in January, and I had some shows to play in June. I sing now, I'm the singer and I play guitar. So I had to rehab myself, and my rehab consisted of very slow walking because I was in a lot of pain. I had to do a lot of protein, sleep, and vagal nerve stimulation. And part of the problem was that, you know, when I was a GI surgery, so they actually clipped a little bit of my vagus nerve. And in so doing, it was causing this reaction in my body where I was in 24/7 panic attack stress. Like it was just always on. And so this was the only thing that I could do to bring my sympathetic system back. And it literally took months to rehab that and to bring it back. Wow. So Dan, I mean, long story to get to your question. When you think about exercise, it's not just a once every 2 weeks thing if you really want to get the full benefit of it.
Yeah.
If you're thinking of a deep breathing exercise or meditation, it's not, you know, it's not once every month.
Yeah.
This has to become a part of the day. And so the cool thing is that stimulating the vagus nerve, there's a lot of ways to do it. One way is sound. Yeah. Humming, turning on your favorite music and singing. I recommend like 3 to 4 songs. That gives you almost 20 minutes of good vagal nerve stimulation. Beyond that, if you take like the hot cold shower, that strengthens your vagus nerve.
Right. So that's interesting.
When we strengthen the nerve, what it's doing, the correct term is called strengthening vagal tone. So kind of like if you've got a toned muscle, you can think of these exercises as strengthening the nerve. And what that does is help you adapt to stress. So let's say I watch the news and I get all pumped up. If my vagal tone is strong, I bounce back quickly and can get on with my day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if it's not, like if I'm really sick or if I've not been taking care of myself, the stress of that one news show might just send me off into days and days of chronic stress and complaining and all the things that just aren't good for us.
Yeah.
So yes, this is something to do daily, whether it's chanting Om, whether it's saying Amen, whether it is humming, singing, all those things do a great job of building this. And on top of that, when you do, you also strengthen your vocal cords, which will make your voice deeper and more resonant.
Yeah, I read somewhere that there's you call it the baseline of the vagus nerve is almost like it comes from the mother. So we're at birth, it comes from almost like the mother, and there's you can either improve it and regulate it upwards. Yeah, or if you do nothing with it, it declines. Is that correct? Is there an imprint that comes from comes from birth with the vagus nerve that can then be regulated once you understand what you're doing?
It's a really good question. I don't know exactly the answer to that. I will say that When a baby is born, if they are born into a stressful situation, like if they have a low Apgar, my first daughter had a very low Apgar, that it can affect that parasympathetic balance for a long time. Still to this day, she still deals with anxiety, and she's had it from birth. So that doesn't surprise me, but I don't know the research behind that.
Right. Okay. Cool. And So kind of reading between the lines, a lot of this, not just the vagus nerve, but which I call it, is it, I guess, at the center of all of this, because every sound that we produce is kind of stimulating it that in some way. But kind of reading between the lines, this is almost like another tool, much like meditation, much like breathing, much like being out in nature, to bring you back to center, to bring you back to your core natural self. Is that right? Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah. Absolutely. It's all of those things, and it's also a way in. So if you're someone who's looking to experience the depth of your consciousness, sound is like a doorway and a path all in one to help you get there. If you want to experience a really deep meditation that slows down the speed of your brain waves, if you just do the humming exercise we did a little while ago, hang out with that for 10 to 20 minutes and notice how you feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you have trouble meditating, use 5 minutes of humming or om or chant, whatever you like, and it prepares your brain to be in meditative state rather than just sitting there waiting and hoping for your mind to clear out.
Yeah.
It's a shortcut. There's a reason why all the different monks pray repetitiously. Like, it puts you into an altered state, a healthy, natural, good altered state.
Mm. Have you found there's a, I'd imagine you perhaps see this at the beginning, but I'll let you say or not. But do you find when you're doing, like, you know, sound healing workshops, when you're working with people, there's a resistance to being vocal? There's a resistance to, like, using the voice in a way that is other than just talking to someone?
Absolutely. It is my number one. I had to solve that skill set in my facilitation before I could do anything. Mm. The same goes for when I bring a drum to a beginner. So I bring African drums to people sometimes, and we make music, and there's that resistance. And it just comes from fear of humiliation. Someone's going to make fun of me because at some point back in the day, someone did. I hate the feeling of humiliation. And so, you know what? I'm just not going to do anything, and then I'll be safe.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah. And, you know, my whole tack is with sound healing, it doesn't matter what the quality of your voice is. It doesn't matter if you can be in pitch. It doesn't matter if you know what pitch means. Mm. All that is required is the vibration. The vibration does all the work. And if you can't stand the sound of your voice, if you're really hung up on it, just get your music out, turn it out a little louder than your voice, make the sound, and help your vagus nerve and help your health.
Yeah, that's, I thought that might be, that might be the case, because people do have, like we said before, the kind of voice, the breath, these are things that are essential to us, but we don't practice using them. Yeah, and where most of us are uncomfortable with the sound of our own voices because we don't actually spend time listening to it. It's like sometimes you hear a recording back of yourself and you think, that's not me. Is that me? Is that really what I sound like? Yeah, and then that triggers this idea that people don't want to then talk, or they don't raise their voice. They don't let their opinion be heard. So yeah, I'm not surprised that that's the case, but thank you for kind of clarifying that. How do you put people at ease with that?
Well, a lot of it is just being with them and smiling at them and being authentic with them and letting them know from the very beginning that you don't have to do anything you don't want to do. I give people choices.
Yeah.
I'm not going to coerce you. There won't be any shaming. And if you give yourself a chance, you might find something today that will change your life.
Yeah.
But you're the one. I can't do it to you or for you.
Yeah.
I can only show you.
Yeah.
I don't want to make you dependent on me. I want you to depend on yourself.
Yeah.
Giving somebody, offering somebody a tool, showing them how it works, explaining it to them, is, I think, the quickest way for the idea to spread through humanity.
Mm.
Just give it to them.
Absolutely. I think with many of these things, the actual experience, when people have the experience, that's when they suddenly realize that actually this is good. I know a lot of the practices that I do myself, perhaps the first time you do them, they're a little bit different. And so you feel a little bit kind of anxious about it. But as you feel into it and you kind of just let your body go and you let yourself go, you let your mind go, you know, all of a sudden you find yourself thinking, wow, this is amazing. I feel great. You know, and I guess that's the point you're trying to get them to without forcing is so they have the realization themselves that actually this is something's changing within me.
Yeah, I won't be in business very long if I can't deliver.
Yeah.
You know, if I can't back up what I'm saying, no one's going to buy my stuff. And if they do, they're going to return it and they're going to be mad. Right. Yeah. And, you know, life is short. I'm here just to offer the idea. And I also trust people. So for some folks, just showing up and listening about it is a lot for them.
Yeah.
Like sometimes just being in public is a lot for a person. And so I learned to trust people. I start with the premise, and this might sound cheesy, but it's true, that I love them first. Mm-hmm. Like I do. I don't know them. It's not a romantic love. It's just that I have love for humanity. I believe in the good in people.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think given the chance that the majority of people want to feel good, and if I can play a role in that, then I feel fulfilled in my mission here.
Yeah. Do you work with children, or is it just adults you work with?
I do. I share this with kids, high school kids. Most of my work is with young adults on up, but I have done this with younger kids, and they respond very well to it, especially those who are like under 8 and still like in play mode. Like if you set it up like a game, they're like in.
They're very
sensitive to it. Like they feel it right away and they like the feeling and they want to do it more, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think, as I mentioned before, you know, one of our goals is to reconnect children with those pieces, those foundational pieces of who we are. The breath, the voice, sound. So as they can, self-regulate, so as they can navigate this world, because let's face it, the world is changing faster than it's ever changed before. And you know, the level of thinking that we have as adults, as parents, is not gonna, we can't see the world in the way that they see it. All we can do is give them tools that we know for centuries and centuries have brought us back to who we are. Yeah, and then trust. You know, that once they're there, then they can learn, they can speak, they can communicate, with a clearer, less skewed view.
I think it's beautiful what you're doing, first of all. I think it's an excellent idea and so needed. And I think, you know, people watching, if you think about it, one of the best gifts you can give to a child is access to themselves, access to what they're capable of, and trust that they will take the reins from there.
Yeah.
But we have to encourage them to be exactly who they are.
Absolutely.
Right? Whatever that is, and to give them access to, like what you're saying, to emotional intelligence, to how the heck does this body work? Mm. How can I make this the optimal version of myself, health-wise, emotional, spiritual, physical.
Yeah.
And then to model it, do it too, you know, be in there with them. Don't just shout it at them.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know? I see these kinds of practices, and it's already happening, as part of kindergarten. When you learn the ABCs, you also learn deep breathing, and you also learn how to self-regulate through rhythm and humming. Like these are birthright activities.
Yeah, they're tools that we're born with, and yet we don't use them enough, do we? We don't use them, and we don't use them in the right way. Is perhaps the more important thing.
Well, and I'll say this too, that you know, especially here in the States, we are a consumer-driven country. It's all about making cash, and we all need to make a living. Yes, but a lot of information doesn't get promoted because it's free.
Yeah.
Right? It does the job of a painkiller. It does the job of a sleeping pill with no side effects. It actually does it better. It does the job of bringing my anxiety down so I don't have to take Xanax.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a lot of money being put in to marketing things that are completely natural.
Yes.
Because there's not enough billions to be made. That's my opinion about it. But I see it so much, and it's it gives me a lot of fire to want to get this out to a lot of people.
Yeah, for sure. I want to ask you a slightly different question and refer to a study that I came across in the last 6 months. And it was a study that was conducted by Dr. George Land and Beth Jarman. They were engaged by NASA to compile a test that would test the level of creative genius within applicants that were applying to become engineers or be scientists at NASA. They created this. It was successful. It was used in the recruitment process. But then they decided that they would test this against kids and adults, just in general population. And what they found was that at the age of five, children at the age of five test at 98% creative genius. By the time they're 15, it's 12%. By the time they're 31, it's 2%. Yeah, so there's this gradual decline. For me, the thing that stood out was we're born with access to genius, all of us. Yeah, but over time, that gets eroded. Whether it's by the way the current education system teaches, whether it's by media influences, by parental influence, by peer influence, whatever it is, that gets eroded. So my question, I guess, is. Is there, from your knowledge, and I'm not expecting you to know 100%, but just your view on it, perhaps, is there a connection between creative intelligence, creative genius, and creative thinking, and music and sound?
I definitely think so. So one thing that we do know from brain research is this sort of brainwave state that they call flow state, where ideas come effortlessly, where my movements, like if I'm an athlete, like everything feels effortless and I'm just in the zone.
Yeah.
That zone is a brainwave state. These practices that we're talking about, whether it's deep breathing, whether it's repetitious chanting, drumming, naturally put the brain into that creative flow state. I find another way to get in there is long periods of silence.
Yeah.
So sometimes when I drive on a long trip, I don't listen to anything. I've got every podcast in the world, but I'll take time in silence. Yeah. And that's when the ideas come, or if I'm out in nature and I'm just walking and breathing, and remember the parasympathetic and sympathetic system? When those things get into balance, my brain will go into more of a flow state.
Yeah.
And, there's a connection there. There's also, I was reading a study. I don't have it all in my head right now, but it's talking about if you want to improve your ability to get into that flow state, one of the best creative times is going out and taking a walk with somebody. So if you have to have a meeting or a conversation that's about brainstorming, bring your phone or bring your notebook, go for a walk and talk and do it for half an hour, an hour. And that gets the creative parts of your mind, plus the brainwave state itself, into that zone that helps you bring the ideas forth.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've actually seen, I can't remember who it is, but I've seen that there are some successful entrepreneurs or business people who have a lot of their meetings doing exactly that. It's a walk with me, type of situation, and they have their meetings on the go. They have their meetings while they're talking in nature outside rather than just in the office.
Yeah, for my business partners, the guy that you met, Dan Ostrowski, every time we have our phone meetings, he and I get on the phone and we both walk, but he's in Maryland and I'm in Pennsylvania. And I can hear his feet crunching on the ground and he can hear the birds on my end. And we might stay on the phone for 90 minutes just like because the ideas, they don't stop, which is a beautiful thing. It's like opening the funnel, if you will, to bringing the stuff in.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But imagine little kids getting that knowledge at five, like, hey, let's go for a walk and then let's paint. Let's go for a walk and then let's do some creative music making. Let's see what that does.
And I think this is part of the this is part of the thing. It's almost like we bring too much rigidity into life. Dr. George Land talks about this, and he talks about there being two types of thought, two types of thinking: divergent thinking and convergent thinking. The convergent thinking is what is taught traditionally in the typical education system, which is to think within boundaries. Here's the rules. Now solve this problem within the boundaries of these rules. And so you're taught to, either acknowledge or dispute based on a set of parameters that have already been prearranged. Whereas divergent thinking is that open box, out of the box kind of thinking. And what they do is they try and teach the two at the same time. But the brain can't do both of those at the same time because it's using different parts of the brain. And so eventually, because they're consistently being told to think in one way, and think convergently, the divergent piece gets quite damped down. It's almost like if you get told enough that you're not a good singer, eventually you believe you're not a good singer. And this is the same thing that's happening, according to his research, it's the same thing that's happening within the brain. And that's part of the reason why we see this decline in creative genius, creative intelligence, or creativity, whatever you want to call it. But it's those places, like you just said, it's those places where the thoughts really just flow and the ideas flow much easier. And it's that I believe we need to unlock, and we need to preserve it for longer if we're going to create a generation of young people who have the ability to think differently and the ability to change some of what's going on in the world.
You're exactly right. And I think that there's a place for both. We need structure and we also need freedom. And what I see here in the States, mostly by the time students get out of high school into college, that if I don't have a rubric for them that tells them exactly what to do step by step by step, it's almost like they're lost. They're not unintelligent people. They're some of the most intelligent kids I've met. And when I give them an exercise where they just have to make it up, like they get anxiety attacks because, well, what do you mean? Like, how do you just make something up? And that's, it's part of the exercise. And so with them, I'll actually put them into a slight state of stress where I attach points to it. You've got 20 minutes. You've got to figure this out. It's life or death. Your grade depends on it. And I walk out of the room and I'll look through the window and watch them struggle. And we'll do rounds of this, like creative music making, where they have to figure out how to make something that is exciting and energetic and together. And they eventually do. And it's all about letting their energy come out and letting themselves enjoy the process rather than trying to analyze it and figure it out. Like you're saying, there's a place for balance in both, just like the two edges of the nervous system.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What would just imagine for a moment, a world where, like you said, at 5 years old, kids are humming, kids are stimulating their vagus nerve, and that's part of the curriculum all the way through. And imagine a world where everyone is practicing this. What do you believe would be the impact of that?
I think we would have a more peaceful society. I think that there would be less pain in general, because I think a lot of our pain comes from not understanding who we are, or even worse, repressing it, being told that it's wrong or bad. I think that causes lifelong pain. Yeah. That sometimes we aren't even aware of. I think it would give people a much greater state of health, because when my parasympathetic and sympathetic systems are in balance and I can recover from stress fast, I'm not taking on damage from chronic stress every day. I think that anxiety attacks go away or are greatly reduced. I think depression gets reduced significantly. I think heart problems get significantly reduced. Mm-hmm. I mean, just imagine people having a strong vagal tone for their whole life, yeah. where they're resilient, where they don't get reactive in every stressful situation and feel the need to have an argument for no reason other than I get a hit of dopamine from it.
Mm-hmm.
I think rates of addiction would go down because I'm not in so much damn pain all the time. And plus, I understand how to work with my own energy.
Yeah,
I think the implications are profound. And that's, you know, that's one of the reasons I'm here. I'm doing my part in that.
Yeah, for sure. What a beautiful world that would be, hey?
It's happening. I see it. I see it in small pockets of people.
Yeah.
I get the feedback from people that say, I don't understand, but this technique is bringing my blood pressure down. How did you do that? I didn't. You did.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
It's in there.
Mm. Yeah. I think this is the thing. There's a culture right now of looking outside for solutions all the time. Like, and it kind of like points to what you talked about, you know, it's living in this society of consumerism where actually, you know, something goes wrong, the immediate thing we do is look outside for something we can buy to make it better, instead of actually doing what they would have done thousands of years ago, which is look inside, figure out what's going on, you know, speak to an elder, you know, who's seen that or been through that before, and have something done that's from nature, you know, to bring us back into balance again. You know, it's like you say, it's all within us. We have just got into a habit, a behavior pattern of, you know, reaching for, you know, the next call it bottle of pills that's gonna treat something, not even thinking about how we can treat it first ourselves.
Yeah. And you know, for the person watching out there, that inclination to ingest or consume something, it's not your fault. Right? It's not your fault that you might do that, because we've been encultured that way. Exactly. To do that. I think both the UK and the US, we have command and control institutions.
Yeah.
You know, schools being one of them, some religions being one of them,
yeah.
Politics, these things where it's either this or it's that. It's yeah. either right or it's wrong. That's a mindset.
Yes.
Right? And what we know, the longer we start to explore humanity, we realize, well, you know, it's this, but then there's a shade of this, and then there's, you know, these incremental shades of all these different answers. So it's not dual. It's not this or that. It's this, 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 and that too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's complex.
Yeah.
Right? We have to start to get into a mindset where if someone's presenting me with a choice, either this or that, that I go, no. Hold on, that's not possible, because I know that in every situation, there's at least 7 or 8 choices.
Yeah.
You know, so don't manipulate me that way.
Yeah. 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 I think this is what you're kind of like pointing at is a little bit like Carol Dweck's work, the Stanford professor, Carol Dweck, and she talks about growth mindset and the difference between, you know, kids that have a growth mindset, kids that have a fixed mindset. And what's interesting, what I found quite interesting about that is that children with a fixed mindset are often more commonly, and perhaps unsurprisingly for many people, more commonly those that are what you would class as intelligent, the more intelligent children, because they've been conditioned, you know, do well in that test and you'll get this thing.
Right.
And so they build up this idea, you know, that things are either right or wrong. You know, I've either done well or I haven't.
Right.
Whereas those kids who are in a growth mindset are encouraged, not that they've done wrong, but just that it wasn't quite right this time. Yeah. So, you know, let's look at how we can find another way to do it. And that, you know, kind of stimulates all sorts of other thought patterns within their brains. And actually they then become all of these other things we've talked about. They become more resilient. They become more creative. Yeah, they become more balanced. They become better leaders, better problem solvers, because they have this growth mindset as opposed to this fixed mindset that is, that is very much, you know, right or wrong, you know, good grades, bad grades, you know, reward, no reward.
Right, because, you know, some of command and control is that when you're wrong, then you're shamed.
Yeah.
You know, your voice isn't so good. Maybe you shouldn't sing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or, my God, when you dance, you look so stupid. You probably shouldn't dance.
Yeah.
Or, man, you got no rhythm. Why are you drumming?
Yeah.
Like there's all that shame as a human being, man, that hurts on a deep level.
Yes.
And so again, though, when we are more resilient, like that shame stuff, we start to see, oh, that's that person's.
Yeah.
It's not mine. I'm not going to own that and take it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm conscious of time. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. And you shared so much, you know, really, really valuable information. I hope that, you know, someone listening, you know, takes something away from this, does a little bit more research, and we'll put some links to, you know, where they can find out more about you and more about the work that that you're doing, Jim. And yeah, I hope that someone takes something away from this and actually starts to look at, yeah, how you can start to self-regulate, how you can start to use, yeah, call it sound, how you can start to use like the vagus nerve in order to bring yourself back into some balance, to reduce some of the perhaps stress that you might have, you know, in life. And I'd encourage you, if you're a parent, you know, to use this with your kids as well, to try this with your kids, to get them into the habits of, you know, looking inside and trying to find solutions for problems internally rather than just externally. Any final words, Jim?
Yeah, I'll just say, if you need exercises, if you need resources, if you go to donovanhealth.com, I have a free podcast called the Sound Health Podcast, and I write articles every week on music and healing and the research behind it. I often include free exercises in those. So if you sign up for my email list on donovanhealth.com, you'll get them every day, and you'll get to see the research. I always include the citations. Okay. So yeah, we're in it and we're ready to go here.
Amazing. Beautiful. Thank you so much, Jim. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I look forward to speaking to you again about this topic really, really soon.
Thanks, Pete. Good luck with what you're doing. The world needs it. Thanks.
We are Sarva. The future of education starts here.